Ask the Mayor, a public affairs program every Sunday morning at 7:05 and then online at WHLC.com. We've caught the mayor once again going from one meeting to another meeting. Good morning, Honorable Mayor Patrick Taylor.
Good morning, Steve.
Boy, last night you had the town board meeting. It was a long one.
Yes, it was, Steve. It was very long.
Well, let's start with that public hearing on the Bank of America building and what's going to be going there.
Well, the old Bank of America building will be removed, and there will be 7 new shops and 7 apartments. The parking will be all some 60 parking spaces that's required for B2, and we rezoned it last night from B3 to B2 and approved the proposed project that Jeff Weller submitted. Anticipate construction to start very soon on that project. It is a site-specific rezoning. In other words, what they build on that site has to be exactly what was in the plans. There can be no deviation. If they were to come back and want to change something, they have to go through the whole zoning petition request all over again. There will be apartments on the second level that I'm sure people will enjoy.
Let's talk about energy, and Kevin O'Donnell came in, and it's not just, well, okay, energy covers a lot of areas, and coal ash fees, and Duke, and solar panels, and metering, and natural gas, so that's, take it away.
Yeah, well, let me tell you who Kevin is. I'll remind people. Kevin, who's the head of Nova Energy, his responsibility is to constantly monitor the contract and make sure that we're not being taken to the cleaners over a charge or whatever. And there are many times when Kevin will see something that Duke is charging and rings the bell and says, wait, that's not appropriate. And then they go into discussions and negotiations. And many times he saves us money. With that said, we asked Kevin last night to talk about the issue of solar generation and net metering, because that is something that's becoming popular now here in Highlands. We just permitted one solar setup at a residence just this past week. Of course, there's that safety concern that we have, just like when somebody hooks up a generator, that if you're doing solar, there needs to be provisions if we have to send our linemen up on the utility poles to make repairs, because to have assurances that energy is not being backfed onto those utility lines. Those kind of things were addressed and are being addressed. But the net metering is a system where you have 2 meters, and one is for the power that's coming into your house when you're not generating solar. The other one meters what you're sending out from your solar generation onto our grid. And then the idea is that we would adjust your bill based on how much you're sending back onto the grid. Kevin had developed a formula on how to determine the kilowatt hour for crediting people on their utility bill, and it's 2.76 per kilowatt hour. It's rather complicated. Kevin was saying that in the state, especially Duke, they're kind of trying to move away from the net metering concept. It's kind of strange that they would be doing that with the concerns people have for producing green energy at this time. But some of these issues are well beyond my understanding. One of the things he pointed out was that it's not just a simple matter of buying electricity. We have to maintain a network. I just signed this past week the monthly check for the transmission fee, which is over $25,000 just for Duke to send that power to our distribution centers, where we then, you know, send it on to the customer. I was talking to our town manager this week about utility poles. And right now we have 40-foot wooden utility poles. Some of them are 55 feet. The new standard is to go to metal utility poles. And that's headed this way. And if you get to a 60-foot length pole, it now has to be metal because of the stress loads. So we're right on the verge of having to convert over from our old wooden utility poles to start using. And, you know, of course, that will be an added expense once we get into those kind of situations.
Now, I've seen some poles that are metal, but then they are painted brown outside as you head toward Castor. So they are stronger, and they look like they're wood.
That's a Core 10 pole, and it's actually a patina of rust on the outside, but it still maintains its strength and integrity. They're very attractive, in my opinion.
And before you talk about natural gas and the dispensing anything of that. Coal ash fees, is the town and everybody going to be paying that for a while?
Kevin, I thought he was going to zoom in, but he actually drove into the town because he's making his rounds to different clients in Western Carolina. So we took a little bit of time to ask him questions, and one of my questions was, what about those coal ash fees? And he said, they're still going to be with us for a while. Over the years, there have been rulings by the Utility Commission, the courts, and all of this kind of stuff. So it's just, we're in coal ash never, never land for the foreseeable future.
Natural gas, and there are so many issues on why it's going to increase percentage-wise. So tell us about that.
And that was the big surprise that Kevin brought to us. He outlined things like inflation, supply chain issues, all of those things. But he also pointed out that North Carolina has a very fragile natural gas distribution system where we just have one major line going up I-85. And he says that puts a lot of pressure on the cost of getting the gas to the power plants and generation, especially with the energy problems we're having with the Russian-Ukrainian world situation. And this is just a rough description. We were at one time paying $4 and something per cubic yards of natural gas. Now Duke is having to pay over $7. That's a real spike in cost. And Kevin is saying that in the next year, that the price that Duke will charge us will go up as high as 20%. He also points out for the Duke Energy retail customers, he anticipates their costs going up to 30 or 40%. So that's kind of shocking. And he was recommending that we become proactive and go ahead now and start raising rates so we soften the blow. I appreciate what Kevin recommended. I'm not so sure that the board, and I know the mayor's not enthusiastic about raising rates at this time. We are at the closing of our budget year. We'll start a new budget in July. These rate increases will occur later on in the year. So my feeling is, at least this year, we need to just hold the line and wait and see. We do have those reserves in the electric fund, and we don't need to just immediately start having major rate increases. But on the other hand, and Kevin is right on this, we can't ignore those rate increases and say, oh, we'll just hold the line and won't pass them on. We can do that to some degree, but we could very quickly be in a situation where those reserves are lost to these rate increases. So we're just going to be monitoring the situation in the coming months to see what actually develops.
Yeah, some presentations, and Cynthia Strain was there, and she had a presentation for BearWise, and you are looking at new labeling for that.
Yeah, you'll see in town some new labels which will read stash and latch, and that's a very good advice for containing the bear situation. If you have a bear-resistant roll cart, and especially our commercial roll carts, we're encouraging people always do not overfill. Fill those carts and make sure that your garbage is in those carts, you've stashed it in, and it's latched. Because this is the beginning of the spring where the bears come out, and they will be looking for easy food sources. So I hope that we will all abide by that advice and make sure that our garbage is secured so the bears can't get to them. I think that it's an essential program if we want to maintain the beautiful appearance of Highlands.
I've seen some videos of bears in backyards, and we need to watch it. And the ADA, the compliance for the handicapped, was covered.
Our town manager had alerted the board at a previous meeting that we need to do an Americans with Disabilities study. DOT encourages us to do that, especially for walkways. So we've hired a specialist company that will come in for about $40,000. They will do a complete study over about a 6-month period where they will tell us where we need to improve accessibility and where we're okay.
And before we get to the closed session, the town board approved the radar signs that addressed Little Bear Pen and the speed limits on 64.
It was a unanimous vote, but there's several commissioners that aren't real enthusiastic about the radar signs because some of them feel like people will respond to them once or twice, and then they tend to ignore them. But I think we need to make every effort to make people aware of their speed in certain critical areas in Highlands. One of the places that we'll be deploying a radar sign is on that curve as you come up to Little Bear Pen, the way you go out. The folks there have been very concerned about people flying around that curve. We reduced the speed limit to 25 a number of years ago, but that doesn't mean everybody will drive 25. And this radar sign, if you're going over a certain speed, for example, in a 25, they could set it that if you're going 10 miles or 15 miles over it, it will flash and warn you that you're going too fast. We will be putting a sign out by the school zone. That's a very important area. We'll be putting a sign or two out near Hicks Road because that is becoming a bypass and people tend to fly through Hicks Road. And I know the neighborhood there would like to see it addressed. And we'll be putting them in some other areas. Our chief of police, Holland, did a very good presentation about the signage, what type of signs we can use. We can wire some of the signs directly into our utility poles. There are other signs that can be more portable with batteries, so we can move them around as needed. The chief pointed out that a lot of people in neighborhoods just get used to driving a certain way. They're not even aware that they're driving too fast.
We're going to talk about short-term rentals and where we're going there, but first, about the closed session.
We looked at some possible properties. I won't go into details because it's closed session. The cost of commercial property around our business district is very, very high now, and that would be a huge factor in acquiring property for additional parking. Commissioner Patterson shares the same concern, and that is, how many more people do we need to pack in downtown? And if you have more and more parking, you have more and more people coming into town. And what about the capacity? What about the quality of life in the community? All of these issues are, I think, critical. I don't want to see us become like a shopping mall in December. Notion of putting off-site parking and trolleying people in or building more parking garages adds to that kind of a situation. And I'm not sure the people of Highlands want that to happen. I think there's a quality of life issue that many people in Highlands are becoming acutely aware of. The comprehensive community plan talks about making parking from 3rd Street all the way down to 1st Street. I talked to our town engineer, Lamar Nix, this past week and said, Lamar, how would this be done? And he described how it would be done. You'd have to, first of all, take the sidewalk and cut that elevated sidewalk down to street level. So when people park, and he said you could park diagonally, they would have a direct access to the sidewalk. But then you'd have to put huge retaining walls going all the way down that sidewalk. And then you'd have to put railings on that so nobody falls off. And you'd have to get clearances from the Baptist Church, OEI, the Chamber of Commerce. And I was saying, my gosh, Lamar, that could be $1 million or more. That is the case for about 60 parking spaces. If you look at the parking space already, starting at 1st Street, going up to 3rd, it is used primarily as an overflow system. And what do I mean by that? You don't see people jam parked on that area all the time. You see it at certain times during the season, for example, on the July 4th holiday, where people will be parking there. Is that investment of, let's say, $1 million and the impact on the appearance of the community, all of that has to be weighed. Is this something we should do or is this something we shouldn't do? Who will pay for this? Because land acquisition, very high. And then construction of a parking system, very, very expensive. Some of the most expensive construction you can undertake.
First of all, that was finding the right balance, and your mayor on duty. It's always challenging.
It is.
And yes, the next question and final question is, when is the decision coming for short-term rentals? You must have talked about that. Where is it at right now?
Referring to my article, it's that whole balance of property rights, prosperity, economic growth, versus community, quality of life, the peaceful enjoyment of residential property. All of those are issues that have to be considered. We have engaged two law firms, Van Winkle and Pointer and Spruill, to give us advice about how we should proceed. Craig Justice has outlined his position, and we actually took some of the proposals to the planning board, and now this other company has given us their perspective. Their briefing should be ready in the next week or so, and once that's all complete, I anticipate us having some special meetings, some public meetings, where the board will then have to look at the options and make some decisions about regulation, things like grandfathering, amortization, where things should be permitted, where they shouldn't be. There'll be a whole array of options that will be on the table, and it will be the challenge and responsibility of the board to make those kind of decisions that will impact the issue of short-term rentals and the entire community.